Now it's time to get stuck into our main topic of the show this week, and that is hormones. Hormones are the chemical messengers that control eating, sleeping, mood, and very much more in our bodies. We're going to be homing in on one subset of these functions, which is the ability and the urge to reproduce.
Sexy times. We'll be looking at why reproductive hormones can have some unexpected and sometimes unwelcome side effects, what happens when the system goes wrong, and we take a look at the common household drug paracetamol, which might be causing problems during pregnancy.
First, though, to help us to get to grips with the basics, we're joined by Helen Simpson. She's a consultant at Addenbrooke's Hospital, where she specialises in endocrinology, in other words, hormones. Thank you very much for coming in to talk to us, Helen. First of all, tell us just the basics. What actually is a hormone?
So hormones are chemical messengers which are produced by endocrine glands into the bloodstreams. From there, they go to distant sites in the body acting on their target cells. And they control pretty much everything that we do. So they help provide energy for our cells to work. They're controlled in regulating growth and reproduction.
How do they actually work? So although we're secreting these chemicals from one place in the body to another, how do the target cells know they're being targeted?
So if you like, it's a little bit like a lock and a key in a door. So the hormone is the key and they act on receptors which are on all cells of the body and they're the locks, and there's a specific configuration for different hormones and their particular receptor. So if we think about estrogen, the female reproductive hormone, that's produced from the ovaries and this acts on certain particular cells in the body. So the breast tissue when we go through puberty, bones and the uterus.
You can therefore constrain which tissues respond to your hormone by having the receptor, the docking station the hormone wants to see, expressed on those particular tissues, which will give them the ability to see that hormone going around in the bloodstream.
That's right. And then some hormones, such as thyroxine, thyroid hormone and growth hormone, they act on actually all the cells in the body, so they have a much more widespread effect. So it enables the endocrine system to target appropriately.
And what about the reproductive system? What are the key players in the reproductive game?
So if we think about reproductive hormones, ovaries produce estrogen and progesterone, and they're the female hormones, and the testes produce testosterone, which is predominantly the male hormone. And these act and are picked up by a negative feedback mechanism from parts of the brain called the hypothalamus and the pituitary. And the pituitary gland is a really important gland for endocrinologists because it controls many hormones in the body. It's about the size of a pea. And if you get two knitting needles and you put one on top of your nose and one by the ear and you press them together where they cross in the middle, that's where the pituitary lives.
It sounds rather uncomfortable.
And if what that can do is regulate, and it's a little bit like the accelerator in a car, it tells the ovaries or the testes how much or how little testosterone and estrogen to make to keep everything in a regular balance.
People will be associated or familiar with the idea that if you have a drop-off in a level of a hormone, any kind of hormone, whether that's insulin for diabetes or thyroid function like thyroxine, we can make these chemicals and put them into the body to replace the missing function.
That's right. So one of our jobs as endocrinologists is we do blood tests to diagnose whether someone has too much or too little of a hormone. So if we're thinking again about the ovaries and if they stop working either at an early age, so premature ovarian failure or the menopause at the average age in the 50s, we can do tests to diagnose that and then we can replace the hormones with hormone replacement therapy, predominantly to reduce the symptoms of the estrogen deficiency.
Is it safe?
It's pretty safe. So there was about 10 years ago, there was a Women's Health Initiative was reported, which was a large study from America, which had some quite scary data suggesting there was quite a large increase in breast cancer and heart disease. But when this data was reanalyzed, it looks like those women were 10 years older than when we use it usually in the UK, so over the age of 60. And they were often more overweight than our British counterparts. So when we've looked at the data now, it looks like the increased risk in breast cancer is probably approximately 4 in 1,000 women for about 5 years of use. If you're before the age of the menopause, there's no data there saying that these hormones are unsafe.
And is there an equivalent for men? Could men have a testosterone boost via a patch or whatever to overcome some of their declining testosterone levels with age?
So testosterone replacement is available in the same way HRT is for women. The controversy is whether this treatment is beneficial for men, of middle-aged men, where there's no definite evidence of testosterone deficiency. And again, there does seem to be some risks. The FDA sent out a warning earlier in this year in that there may be potentially increased risks of heart attacks and vascular disease and blood clots in middle-aged men without testosterone deficiency who are using testosterone replacement.
Now, all of these athletes who are naughty and they abuse anabolic steroids, which are male hormones, aren't they, that promote the maleness. They encourage muscle growth and all that kind of thing. Do they end up with their bits shrinking because they're basically suppressing strongly the need to make their own testosterone through taking it in a pill?
That's exactly right. So what happens there is, if, as you're taking a hormone from an exogenous source, the pituitary and the hypothalamus, which I mentioned earlier, that essentially goes to sleep. So it stops sending the signals to the testes. And that's partly why they shrink, because they're not having to make testosterone anymore. And if you take these for enough years, then the hypothalamus and pituitary will go to sleep permanently and they won't wake up again.
So even if the person stops taking the anabolic steroid, then their testes are destined to remain like peanuts forever.
Essentially, that's right. And we're getting more patients referred in this context who then may need to go on more medical testosterone replacement.
It's a sobering message in that, isn't it? Thank you very much, endocrinologist Helen Simpson.
Well, that aptly leads us on to our next topic. Now,